Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Dan, our next guest is Jennifer Fortney. She's written a book about why public relations is so important to small businesses, and we couldn't agree with more. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Okay. Jennifer, tell us a little bit about your background, a little bit about your book, and the website where people can find you and your book.
Sounds good. So I came to journalism not as a route of study in college. I actually was on scholarship for singing, and I literally ran into a journalism professor on campus one day, and he thought, hey, you've got a great voice. Maybe you should be in broadcast. So I started taking a class on learning about news, and found that I wasn't really a hard news person. You know, some of those stories I would go out and cover and shadow reporters. I thought, this is just heartbreaking. How can you do this? And my professor said, you know, you're really great at news. You should look at public relations. So there was a public relations type degree program in the School of Journalism at the University of Kansas called Business Communications. And I have to say, I still use quite a bit of it today, which is crazy because the media industry has changed so much, but a lot of the foundational things have not changed, which is always good. And I went to go work in broadcast. I wrote broadcast news and worked in radio as the director of promotions and marketing, and then sports marketing, and ended up in Chicago working in a corporate PR agency. So corporate clients like Kraft. I worked on the Got Milk campaign, things like that. And moved to another smaller agency where we still had larger clients, but I got a chance to work with small businesses. And this is kind of where the bug bit me. It was really great to have an entrepreneur small business as a client, and we could actually see the impact that public relations and generating positive news stories for their businesses could have, where you don't necessarily see that with a larger corporate client. You don't know if what's generating the sales is an on-shelf promotion or a point-of-sale coupon or your PR. So with smaller businesses, we could really, really see the impact, and that was very cool for me. And in about 2001, I opened my agency, Cascade Communications, here in Chicago, and I really focused at the time heavily in food and beverage and a lot of restaurants, and then I started meeting all of these very cool small businesses and startups that had great stories to tell. And I have been doing that since 2001, and I love, as a journalist, telling those stories that nobody else is telling, which is a lot of fun. And over the years, many people would come to me and say, what is PR? I don't understand it. Or I've worked with somebody and they just did social media and they said that they were a PR person. So there was so many mixed messages out there about what public relations really is and how it works that I decided to teach a class on it at SCORE, which I highly recommend. Small businesses, hit your SBA, hit your SCORE offices, lots of great resources there. And I taught that class for 5 years, and then I turned it into a book, which is called Pitched, A Simple DIY Guide to Public Relations for Small Business, and it's now available on Amazon.
Say it slowly for our audience.
Sure. The title of the book is Pitched, A Simple DIY Guide to Public Relations for Small Businesses. and it's available on Amazon right now.
And your website, if people want to reach you or your book, et cetera?
Well, they can search Cascade Communications, PR, and they can find me. The website address is cascadecoms.com. Comms being short for communications would be C-O-M as in Mary, M as in Mary, S as in Sam.com.
Hmm. Okay. Now,
and, of course, Cascade, like a flow of cascade or a cascading cascade of success on you.
Well, Dan and I have been in this field for a long time. And, you know, this program and other programs we've been involved in, we see many pitches from many different people. And I'm always surprised by how, well, first of all, incomplete they are, and how lacking they are in real storytelling. Can you give us an idea of some of the things a small business should recognize beforehand, before getting into the business, not getting into the business, but deciding to do public relations?
Sure, absolutely. You know, I actually have a blog that I have not touched in years for small business called smallbusinessexperts.com, if you still want to go. It's got great content on it, but I haven't touched it in years. But, however, my point is I got put into some of these PR list services, which I use and other people use. So I also get really bad pitches from PR people or agencies or small businesses wanting to cover their business. And the number one thing across the board that I see that everybody does wrong or doesn't, or they're just right there, they just don't go far enough, is they don't remember the why. Why did you start your business? Why is it different? Why are you going to change lives? That's a very big question to ask. And sometimes when you're in the weeds of your business, it can be hard to step out and say, okay, why? Why did I do this? And really think about what the meaning behind your business is, because that's what people want to know about. And I'll give a great example. One of the first workshop I taught at SCORE, there was a woman sitting in front of me, and she had created something for the car, and it was sort of like a tray, it looked like a cafeteria tray. It looked kind of, you know, plain cafeteria tray, but the way that it was made was completely different, and her goal was to help people who like to eat in the car, or if you travel long distances in the car, that you would have a place to keep your food, and it would keep you from being distracted and ultimately prevent accidents. And she sent me her press release after the class, and it basically just said, you know, such and such company launches today this car table. I can't remember the name of it. The car table, and here are the benefits, boom, 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 boom. And I thought, oh, God, that's a snore. You know, if it's a boring story, nobody's going to look at it. So what I did was I challenged her to look at statistics on car accidents and to see if there was any correlation between car accidents and eating in the car. And sure enough, there were numbers, really powerful numbers, about how many people get in a car accident while eating in the car. And so she led with that. I helped her rewrite her press release so it was a little bit more powerful with that information. And we pushed the benefits down a little bit more because the why was so important. And that press release, she sent it off to QVC, and they wanted units. And, you know, so it really drove a lot of interest for her and buyers. So you can see the difference just in that example of what is more, what's more newsworthy. So defining that powerful why of your business, of why it's important, why it's going to change the industry, why it's going to change lives, can help you figure out what that newsworthy nugget of your story is.
Well, I wish more people would heed your advice. I get between 10 and 15 new product pitches every day, if not more. Invariably, if there is a good story there, it's often buried in the fourth or fifth paragraph. And most people don't have the time to go down to the fourth or fifth paragraph. Dan, I'm going to turn it over to you, Dan, because I'm sure you have some questions.
Sure. Jennifer, thank you for joining us today. I'm curious about, as a professional, how do you feel about, I always hate to use that word feel because it's a crazy word to use. What do you think about the idea of flat rate PR services where you can buy unlimited services, unlimited exposures for $300 a year?
I think it's a very interesting model that I have not been able to figure out how they actually work. And I would assume there's an automation process there. And like most public relations, there's no guarantee, right? I mean, an act of God or, you know, something takes over the news cycle or maybe it's just bad timing. Maybe a reporter files it away and says, oh, I'll contact them in 3 months, but doesn't bother to let you know. So we know that there are already a number of reasons why there are no guarantees. But I can tell you, if you have a great story, it'll always generate something. I think my concern is that over the years, I mean, I've been doing this a long time. When I first started, you know, we used fax machines. You know, we had, and not everybody had email, believe it or not. So I think when you start blasting or spamming or utilizing the technology that we have today or software that we have today to be able to just blast out, because I would imagine they're basically saying, yeah, we'll just blast it out and blast it out and blast it out for you, which is very little of their time for $300. I mean, it's got to be automated. But what kind of return does that get? You know, I can tell you that pitching media individually and sending people emails individually, researching what do they write on, is it someplace I want to be, or is it relevant even? Because when you pull off of some of these list services, they're not perfect. You really have to clean those lists up. So are you just spamming people? What's the return going to be? You know, when you can do it one-on-one and customize that and maybe target it a little bit better with the story, your return is always better. I don't believe in automating at all.
So the message is important, but I'm wondering whether or not it's a good idea to think in terms of, you know, there are people that come up with ideas and they pitch it to XYZ, and you say to them, you know, well, you need to do this for 90 days, and the customer or the prospect says, well, I really want to try it for 30 days because I don't want to make a commitment for 90 days, and yet if you believe in your process, 90 days may be much more effective if you have multiple messages going out to the customer or the prospect. But expecting one message to produce results is probably foolish, or not.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And when you're dealing with media, everybody has a different angle. Nobody wants to do the same story. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can tell you, I can lead with sort of an overall interesting why driven pitch to media and will still come up with something custom for them at the end of the day. So, or maybe they are working on something relevant and it sparks a different idea for them. So it's a really collaborative process that when you remove the human aspect out of it, that collaboration goes away. And I would be very curious to see what this company's results are. I would caution people to remember sometimes you do get what you pay for.
Okay. So let me go for a little deeper into this issue.
Sure.
If I've got a new product or service, or in the case of you, you've got this book, then you've got something that's unique, timely, something you can promote. But should a guy who runs a local hardware store or paint store or auto body shop, should he be doing PR?
You know, there's so many opportunities out there. I think we get so stuck in thinking that PR is just a feature story or a profile on a business, which, you know, if you are a local auto mechanic, you're probably not going to get a feature in your business unless you've, you know, quadrupled your business somehow in the year, and that's very interesting. What I would say is there's great opportunity for expert positioning for businesses like that they can go to their local media or TV and say, look, I've got, let's say the paint store, I've got the hottest paint colors coming for 2018, and I'd love to show you how to use them. Or if I'm an auto mechanic, I might say, I've got 10, you know, tips to weatherize your car, and the reasons why you really need to weatherize your car. You can't wait for it, right? And the safety aspects of that. So now you're creating that expert positioning for the business. So when I think about PR from my perspective, doing it every day, it's more than just a feature story. It could be an event. It could be an award. It could be, like I've mentioned, expert positioning. There's so many opportunities to get PR for your business.
We specialize on small business. That's the theme of our program, and that's the audience that we have. And we have, you know, 175,000 people who listen to the show every week, and tens of thousands on Roku and other places. But where does a small businessman who might have a unique product or service, where do they go to find somebody to help them with PR in their town?
Great. Yeah, great question. I would first do a search online. If you're not in a large city that probably has a lot more people, I mean, I'm in Chicago, so I can tell you that, you know, you could probably find a PR person on every block around here. But if you're in my hometown of Wichita, Kansas, you know, it may be considerably less. But still a good number of people. So I would do an online search to find anybody who is near you or around in your area. Maybe think about your metro area, because when you're thinking about media, you want to hit the media within that metro area, right, that you and your business sit in. And then I would contact them. I would go through their website. Look at their work, you know, see how you feel about them. What does their website tell you about them? Do you feel comfortable? You know, your perception is really, really important. It's important in PR. It's important in marketing. It's important in business. And it's important when you're putting yourself in the shoes of looking for something to purchase or buy or a PR partner, is how do you feel, right? Perception is how you feel about something. I always say go with your gut, and then call them and talk with them. And don't be afraid to ask for references, people who can speak on how to work with them, what it's like to work with them, were they happy with the work, and the results of that work, and compared to the price. So just like I would go to Amazon or any website and say, I want to buy this dress from a boutique that I really like. I'm going to look at that dress and I'm going to evaluate the value and how do I feel the value connects with that dress. And that is the purchase process that everybody goes through, whether you're, again, whether you're looking for a PR person or you're looking for a brand new dress. So I would definitely ask for all of those things and then get an idea of how you feel about that person when you're talking to them on the phone. If you want to see some thoughts on paper, you know, PR people, we and marketing people, we put a lot of time and energy often into proposals that we put together for our clients. Some people may just kind of do a blanket, they have like a pricing structure, maybe where they just say, okay, I'll just take your story and take it to 10 media and this is what it's going to cost you. And that is true for all of us. And then other businesses need something a little bit more custom and thought through. So just remember that they are putting time and energy into whatever they're putting together for you. And maybe if you don't need anything so fancy, you could just ask them for something more casual that will take less of their time, but give you an idea of their thinking. And if you want to move forward with them, take that proposal that they put before you and use that as a start of a conversation of working together and putting together a plan that you feel very comfortable with and they know that they can accomplish for you.
I have one more question, then I want to turn it back to Don. I appreciate everything you just said there, but I think there's one piece of information that I know I need, and my guess is many of our listeners. If I'm going to do a Google search, what am I searching for? What am I putting in the search box for Google?
I would put in PR agency Indianapolis or PR agency Madison.
Okay.
There are – don't let the word agency or firm – scare you off, because a lot of independents, including myself, I'm a virtual firm, we use that term because it's standard, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be a 20 or 100 person office that's going to cost you tens and tens of thousands of dollars. So
mm-hmm.
Don't let that scare you off, but that's really your best bet to find, to search.
And the other thing is, and I'm sorry, Donna, just on the way she answered the question stimulated another question. What do you think about using the gig economy for PR?
I would be cautious about the websites you go to. Again, you will get what you pay for. There are some websites out there that really focus on professional services. People who are, you know, obviously they're very good at what they do. They're going to be a little bit more expensive, but they're going to be more efficient and more productive for you. And I think that that's a big difference. You know, if you want to, if you can't afford somebody who's going to, you know, be medium range, and you're looking at hiring an intern or somebody who says they'll do it for $5 an hour, which is not even minimum wage, it's kind of crazy. Then I would take the time to figure it out or learn how to do it for yourself, because, you know, that's part of the reason why I wrote this book, was it's a step-by-step process. When you're done with this book, you'll have everything that you need to go out and pitch your business to media, and it saves you time.
Super. When we finish the interview, I just want to ask you one other question, so I'll give it back to Don.
We're talking with Jennifer Fortney. Jennifer, your website again and the name of your book?
My book is Pitched, A Simple DIY Guide to Public Relations for Small Business. It's available on Amazon and Kindle now. My website is cascadecoms.com. That is Cascade, CASCADECOM as in Mary, M as in Mary, S as in Sam.com.
Do you ever think of going back to Wichita?
You know, it's going home is always a thought in the back of your mind. I love Chicago. I love the energy of it. But it's interesting. Recently, I have been doing or getting calls from or referred to businesses in Wichita. I've done some work for friends there, and then they refer me to other people. And so I can see that there's definitely a need there. Unfortunately, I will say that, you know, going back to the idea of perception, a lot of people, I think my business does well because I'm in Chicago, and the perception of that tends to be, unfortunately, better. But, yeah, good people, good salt of the earth people there. Going home is always it's always a romantic idea.
Well, the reason I asked the question is small businesses tend to seek out services that are closer to home and not reach out. And in the area of public relations, here in New Jersey, Booton has become a kind of a center for small PR firms in New Jersey, little boutique firms, and they seem to have thrived on the local message. My real question is: is it possible for a smaller company to get better services from a smaller, more local agency rather than a national one?
Well, let's break that down, because that there are a number of things in that question. So, obviously, when we talk about in the industry, when we talk about a national agency, we're usually thinking about a large agency as a national agency. You know, today with technology, you know, I can say, you know, I'm virtual sole proprietor, but I have contractors and team members and partners that help me, provide services that are affordable to clients. But I would say over the years, the majority of my clients are across the country, not just in Chicago. So then we're national as well in that scope. I can tell you that research and really ask good questions of the people you work with or you're looking at working with. Not every PR agency or PR person is made equally. There is a reason why a number of my friends in my hometown have reached out to me for help after working with local agencies that they weren't as happy with. So do your research. If you feel more comfortable with somebody who can meet for coffee, walk in your store, then I would look for the best choice locally. If you're not as concerned about that and you're perfectly happy talking over Skype video calls and that's enough for you to feel connected with the person who you're working with, then branch out and just really find the right person for you.
Jennifer, it's been wonderful talking with you. I think we could talk another half hour. Dan, you had one more question you wanted to ask?
Yeah, I was just thinking in terms of so you're a virtual office as opposed to a brick and mortar store.
Right. Yeah. You know, okay. I mean, I work with small businesses and startups, and it's easier for me. I've got great partners, and we keep a cost low. My clients don't necessarily can't afford all the overhead that comes with a proper office, and my staff and the people I work with are senior and seasoned veterans and professionals, which would cost you a lot more if they were on a proper agency level.
Yeah. Good. Thank you. Don, back to you.
We've been talking with Jennifer Fortney. A link to her website will be on www.recalculating.biz tonight. You can hear this program and every other program on our website. Jennifer, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. This is a lot of fun. Nice to meet you all. Have a great day.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Marcus Lemonis, J.D. Powers, and John Scully, and 100 other presidents and experts contributed to Recalculating the Book. Why did all these people agree to contribute to the book? I'm Don Mazzella, and I'm the editorial director of Small Business Digest. And for 20 years, we have been offering small business leaders information and data to increase profits. Recalculating the Book was named the best small business book by the Independent Press Association. Whether you need help with marketing, staffing, finance, operations, technology, or many other subjects, they're all here in Recalculating the Book. They're now available at Amazon at a reduced cost. We've also created the radio program Recalculating on recalculating.biz.
Dan Perkins here from recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Welcome back to Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.
Dan, Tom Sellers is the co-founder of Mermaid Pillow Company. His inspirational sequin pillows and bracelets are a nationally known brand. We asked him to be on the program today to tell us about how he came to be the co-founder of Mermaid Pillow Company and what are the reasons for its success. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi, Don. Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Okay. First, tell us a little bit, Tom, about yourself and your company, the Mermaid Pillow Company, and a website before we do anything else.
Don, I'll get the name and the website out of the name. My name's Tom Sellers. I'm co-founder of Mermaid Pillow Company. The website is mermaidpillowco.com. I've been in e-commerce for over 10 years. We've been entrepreneurs for longer than that. But we started Mermaid Pillow about a year and a half ago. And we design, Mermaid Pillow designs and creates mermaid pillows, blankets, and bracelets for kids that, like you said, are inspirational. They're fun. They're calming. Kids are drawn to them initially because of the illustrations on the front. Each pillow features, you know, things kids like, a mermaid, a dinosaur, a unicorn. And the back, as you touched on, Don, it's covered in these reversible sequins that kids draw on. So we started about a year and a half ago.
Do you create your pillows here in the country or outside?
We design the pillows here in Omaha, where we're located, and we manufacture them overseas. Now, that would be the pillow cover. The pillow insert is manufactured here in the United States.
Now, what do you mean by inspirational pillows?
Yeah, for instance, we have a pillow on our site. It's one of the more popular ones. It's called the Confidence Pillow, and that came from my wife. It was something my wife and daughter say each time before bedtime. It kind of goes over, you know, I'm nice, I'm funny, I'm kind, I'm strong, I'm good enough, and it kind of goes down the line. So inspirational in that way, inspirational in the way that we're looking to help build confidence among kids and help kids feel good about who they are.
Well, are your pillows designed to be slept on as part of a sofa? Where do they go?
Yeah, not really. These are just, you know, they're nice decorative pillows for, say, a kid's room or nursery or something like that. But typically you'll find them just, you know, on a kid's lap. The kids just love to play with these reversible sequins on the back. Again, they can draw on these. If you've seen them, Don, you can draw on the back of these with your fingers. So they've existed for a couple of years. We kind of put the spin on these reversible sequins by putting these kid-themed covers on the pillow.
Dan, I'm going to turn it over to you.
All right, sure, fine. Thank you. Questions. Sure. Tom, welcome to the show, and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Dan. Glad to be here.
I'm fascinated with your pillows because it sounds like, from what you're telling me and just our brief encounter here so far, that your pillows are inspirational and perhaps maybe to some degree, or maybe not, you tell me, inspirational for individuals.
You bet. You bet.
So if you're trying to help the child, and that maybe that's the question I should be asking. Who is the market for your product?
Right. So the answer I would have given you a year ago when we launched these might be different than the answer I give you today. So I'll give you the quick story, Dan. When we launched these pillows a year ago, you know, we thought we were just creating fun, pillows for kids. You know, they're fun to play with, and that's sort of where it ends. But through just marketing and through getting these customers and speaking with these customers, we've learned that there's a number of moms, especially among kids with sensory type issues, that love these pillows. So it might be a mom of a child with, you know, ADHD or autism, and the feedback among just, you know, that group has been overwhelming to us. So that would be one. But I guess generally speaking, you know, parents of kids that are, say, between the ages of, you know, 5 and all the way up to 15, 16, 17 love this pillow.
Really that old? 16-year-old teenagers would still like the pillow. Is it slanted more?
Yeah.
Is the interest more girls than boys, or is it pretty equal or heavily weighted to girls? What is it?
Yeah, it's 60-40. It's 60-40. We have more designs that maybe the average boy would appreciate more. We have less designs. So we have designs like dinosaurs and superheroes and designs like that that maybe, you know, boys might be more drawn to. We have less of those on the site. So the 60-40 split could be due just to that, but it is about a 60-40.
And do you think in the content that you can put on these pillows, do you think the designs, they're 50-50, or even are your designs 60-40 tilted toward girls?
Yeah, and that was the point I was trying to make. I didn't say very clearly yet. 60-40 right now on the site in terms of who's purchasing the pillows, you know, for whom.
Right. I understand you did 60-40 girls versus boys, but I was asking about the content that they can select on the pillows. Is the male and female content about equal, or is there a bias in your content of what you can put on the pillows more towards females?
Sure. I suppose the question would be what qualifies as a male or female pillow, because there's a lot of pillows that, you know, might be split equally. So it's a hard question to answer.
Okay.
Good question. That's hard to answer.
So let's try it another way. What's the most popular pillow with girls, and then what's the most popular pillows with boys?
Oh, I love the question. So it's the Imagine Mermaid pillow. It's the first pillow when you go to our website. that was our initial pillar that we designed, and that's what really was a catalyst behind this business. That's, I suppose you could say, geared more towards girls. Whereas the dinosaur pillow, is the dinosaur discover pillow, is the most popular one among boys. And that's more of an observation based on the photos that have been sent in to us by customers. It reflects the sales, but I'm saying I'm making that distinction just based on that observation.
Yeah. So when you do your pillows come in different sizes, or is it fairly standard?
You know, it's fairly standard. 12 by 20 is the standard size, and then we have another size that's a square pillow, so it's 15 by 15.
And which is the most popular?
The 12 by 20.
12
by
20.
Which accounts for about 80% of the designs in the pillows.
And how are the pillows priced?
The retail price on the 12 by 20 pillows is $47.99. And for the 15 by 15s, it's $44.99.
And how long does it take a customer to get those pillows once they order them?
Yeah, we generally ship same day, and they get them
really?
Within 2 days. Two to three business days. We ship them here in Omaha, Nebraska. So it takes 2 to 3 business days. Typically, we ship USPS priority, which is 2 to 3 business days.
Right. So if I understand what you're saying, there is a on the back of a pillow, there are manipulated or sequins that can be manipulated by the child?
Exactly, Dan. So if you can picture these sequins, there's one color on one side, one color on the other side, and as you run your finger over the sequins, they flip.
Yep. And you can make all kinds of different patterns and things.
Right on.
Okay. And is that part of the pillow more intriguing to your customers than the image on the front?
Such a good question. I think they're drawn initially to the pillow. When they see the design on the front. But I think what makes the pillow long-lasting is these reversible sequins on the back. So I would say that the pillow becomes more of a favorite, say, toy because of the reversible sequins. But I think the initial draw, again, is the cover.
The image on the cover, either the dinosaur or the mermaid or whatever the special cover is.
Exactly.
Did I understand you to say you are totally internet-based?
Totally internet-based. About 97% of our traffic and sales comes directly from Facebook.
So you don't do any, you don't sell it through storefronts or anything like that. It's all off of your website.
You know, we sort of dabbled in it last year. My background, I don't have a lot of experience in that, so I've sort of avoided it, but there was such a demand last year, especially in the fall, that we're just now getting that up and going. We're in a few stores in the United States, but we're not as many as maybe we could be.
So what were the challenges going from a company that was started up to be like many, many, many of the companies that we have on this show that start up as internet-based businesses? Some make the conscious decision they will always be internet. They don't want to go into brick and mortar. What was your decision process? Help our audience understand the decision that you went through to go from e-commerce to considering bricks and mortar.
Yeah, sure. I'll back up a little bit before that even and tell you the backstory. So we've operated these e-commerce stores for the last 10 years. So it's really just been my wife and I will start up these e-commerce stores. We'll build them to a certain point, and then typically what we like to do is sell them. The difference with this particular one, Mermaid Pillow Company, is it took off so quickly out of the gate that we just had to react. So, and I can give you the story on that. You might appreciate it. But It just took off so quickly. We had to react so quickly, hire quickly, and try to build this business. Well, we really have no experience building an actual business. This was a first for us. In terms of what you would think as a business, we operated more as a lifestyle type business in previous e-commerce stores. But making the switch from just direct to consumer to, you know, I guess more B2B or selling to retailers, the opportunity is there. And, you know, the Christmas season's over, things have calmed down just a little bit. Now we can kind of put together a plan. And that was, and you know, we're shipping the orders anyway, and to ship to retailers directly isn't a big burden on our team here. And I think it just makes sense to continue to try to expand the business in that way.
But if you go through another party, a box store, you are making less margin than you are from selling on your internet store.
Totally.
Yeah. And so do you see the chance that you're going to get more volume to justify the lower price point for the sale of your product by going to the big box stores?
Yeah. Yeah. And that would be about the extent of it. You know, again, my experience isn't, I can run the numbers and totally to your point, get that it's a lower margin and we're trying to make up because of the higher volume. So I haven't made any type of conclusion on whether this is good or bad for us. I'm sort of observing at this point. We're in a few stores, we're going to get in a few more, and I'll take it from there.
Are you at the stores that you're in or in the proximity to your company in Omaha, or are you other parts of the country?
Other parts of the world, even, yeah. And stores across the country, and then Australia, Canada is a big one for us, and the UK.
When you look at your internet business, as I understand you, Mermaid Pillow's been around about a year and a half?
About a year and a half, yep.
Yeah. So what are you on a calendar fiscal year or something different?
Something different.
Okay. So what were your last 12-month sales like?
We did about $10 million in the last 12 months.
And the year before that?
The year before that, so we launched this Mermaid Pillow in November of 2016. So we had about a month and a half to work with. There were about 700,000.
700,000 to 10 million. Have you had any problem with inventory and supply going for that kind of a growth rate?
I can't even begin to. Yeah, yes, we have. Absolutely. It was, you know, but the good news is things shot up so quickly in 2016 that our manufacturers at that point were sort of accustomed to our pace. So at that point, it was just a matter of figuring out how to kind of keep that rolling, you know?
And so how is your supply chain? Are you able to get the material? I think you said the cover is made out of country, but the pillow is made inside the United States.
Yeah, exactly. So it's we've been able to keep up, but it wouldn't be at the most. I don't know if I'd recommend our strategy if you have another one, which is these covers that we produce overseas. We have them shipped over by DHL the moment they're done, which takes about 3 days or 4 days
right.
From where it's at to here in Omaha. That's super expensive, so we pay for it in that sense. So if we were able to, we were selling through it so quickly, or rather we were selling through it so quickly, we didn't have an option. But there's better ways to ship the product, you know, and get it over here.
Sure.
Yeah, we were able to keep up and by taking, you know, approaches like that.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with shipping from overseas and DHL and delivery times. Foundation I have use it, get some stuff overseas. So how many, if you're looking at your supply chain, how many different designs do your manufacturers have to make for you, and do you have inventory on everything, or you have to get it custom made?
Oh, fun question to answer. So we have about 60 SKUs. It's split almost equally among pillows, and then there's a matching blanket that goes with the pillows, and then a matching bracelet. Yeah, so these sets of three were the kind of the hot item over the holiday see them. Yeah, so it's we carry it all in-house. We ship it all here from Omaha, Nebraska. In fact, we ship every order in the fall through Christmas here from Omaha with a team of, you know, about 20, 25. So, and what was the last part of your question, Dan? Because it was a good one.
Well, I was just curious about whether you have a chance to build inventory, or is the variety of things that you have to the customer can buy makes it somewhat impractical to have a large inventory of supply on hand.
Gotcha. No, we have enough inventory. We try to keep enough inventory to get us 3 months out. It never seems to work out that way. We're always running behind, but we keep, we store everything in house, and we have everything that's on our website we have here right now ready to ship. Typically, this is interesting, or something your listeners might find interesting. When we launch a new pillow design, we typically launch it in a kind of a pre-order status. So we'll take orders. We'll say, hey, so right now I'm looking at one of our pillows. It's Puppy's Play Pillow. When we launched that design, we didn't go overseas and say, hey, send us 1,000 Puppy Play covers. Instead, we put this cover up on our website, just a sample, and we pre-sold and said, hey, this will ship in three weeks or 4 weeks or whatever it was at the time. We take those pre-orders and then use that to then fund, you know, the purchase that we need to make from our manufacturer to then ship us the covers. So
Right. That's
kind of the way we've operated. And that's the way we've tested new designs, too, to make sure that they work.
Do you think what you have, and we're almost out of time, but because I do want to get it back to Don in a minute, but let me ask a couple more quick questions. Do you think this is a fad, or is this touched the hearts and souls of little girls and little boys like nothing else out there?
Both, but I think it's up to us. So I think if we continue just doing what we're doing, I think eventually sales will go the other direction. But I think if we continue to get creative in the way we market these and who we partner with and that sort of thing. Let me give you a quick example, Dan. How much time do we have?
Go ahead. You just finish. We'll keep you apprised. You go ahead.
Cool. So right now we're working with nonprofit organizations. We have about a half dozen that we're working with in designing a pillow specifically for that organization. So I'll take Ronald McDonald, for instance. We partnered with the Ronald McDonald House here in Omaha to create a custom Ronald McDonald pillow for them. And then we're running a campaign where it's a buy one, give one to both our existing customers and new customers. So it's sort of a new approach to marketing and partnering with them that I think makes a lot of sense, and that's sort of the avenue we're going to right now. So, yeah, to answer your questions, I think eventually if we just relied on what we've always done, the business wouldn't grow forever, but I think we're creative enough to continue to build it.
Let me ask you one more question, then I'll turn it over to Don. How do you acquire customers today?
It's 96-97% through Facebook. We run Facebook ads and primarily Facebook video ads.
Okay. Don, back to you.
Oh, you did a good job, Dan. I wanted to go, Tom, in a little different direction. Who's your co-founder?
That'd be my wife, Tracy.
Well, that's what I figured, but it's interesting. How long have you been? You also indicated that you've done this before, started an e-commerce business, and then sold it. Can you tell some of those businesses and who you sold it to?
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah. So the first one, and we've always been on the Shopify platform. In fact, our very first store was one of the first on Shopify. We sold baby hats, and that's what got us in e-commerce. So at the time, we were running sort of a more traditional web design agency, and we specialized at that time in what was called Macromedia Flash. It became Adobe Flash. It was a technology. That started to go away, and we started this baby hat site, selling baby hats online for no other reason than we had to. We had to find something to do. So it started there. We ended up building that up over the course of 2 years and selling it to just an individual out in Florida. And we've repeated that since with other types of businesses. There was a business where we sold women's boot socks, boot cuffs, like women's socks that they wear with boots. So these little niches we develop, build them up, and the goal was to sell them.
That's fascinating. We've heard about your background. What's your wife's background?
You know, she does, believe it or not, all of the design and then all of the programming, which is not that common. So she can do both very, very well. So the website that you see when you go out there, she's done all the design, all the pillow design she's done, and then all of the code or all the programming on the back end she's done, in addition to just helping, working together and building this business. She does much more than that, but that's, you know, what she does day to day.
It sounds like you have a great husband and wife working team together.
Yeah, if you ask me, if you ask her, she might have a different opinion. No, I'm just kidding. No, she's we're a great team. We really are.
Well, how long have you been together?
You know, it's approaching 14 years. We kind of started this right out of college.
Did you meet in college?
We met in high school. We went to the same high school. But we didn't get together until college.
That's really interesting. Tom, your website again for people and how they can reach you?
Yeah, thanks, Don. It's mermaidpillowco.com, mermaidpillowco.com.
Okay, can you spell it out for our audience?
Absolutely, yeah, mermaid, M-E-R-M-A-I-D, pillow, P-I-L-L-O-W, C-O, as in company, C-O.com.
Well, I don't know about you, Dan, but this has been a fascinating time together, don't you think?
Yeah, and actually, Tom, when we sign off, if you just stay on for a minute, I wanted to ask you one other question off the air.
Okay.
100%.
Well, we're going to, Tom, we're going to sign off from this, and thank you so much for joining us. And that,
thank
okay?
you. Thank you, Don. I appreciate it.
You know, Dan, before we go any further, I want our audience to know about your new runaway hit book on Alzheimer's disease and how it affects teenagers. Please tell us about it.
Yeah, Don, thank you. The book is called Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? It's a book written primarily for children ages 9 to 12, but really needs to be read by the entire family. And what I try to do is I try to take the subject matter of dementia and the challenges to a different level in the form of a mystery story with my two little detectives, two little girls, Hudson and Charlotte. And it really creates a breakthrough opportunity for small children and parents and families to begin to understand the problem with dementia. See, Don, the real challenge is that the children are the forgotten people. Mom and Dad spend so much time working to try and take care of Mom and Dad, they don't take the time to explain to the children what's going on in Grandma or Grandpa's brain. So you can buy it at Amazon.com, or you can order it through your local bookstore or any online bookstore besides Amazon has it available. Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? Illustrations are spectacular. A story by Dan Perkins.
Your runaway bestseller, new book.
Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? By Dan Perkins.
Well, Dan, what do you think about today's guest?
I thought they were terrific. We had great diversity. We had some really good ideas on small business and what they can do with credit and how they can save money with the gentleman from Spent. So I think there was a lot of good stuff. Again, continuing the idea that we are on the air to try and help small businesses grow their businesses and start them. And again, we had content today that dealt with both. And as in the past, if you didn't get all of this show, you can go to our website, recalculating.biz, and look at past shows and expand your education of how you can be better at what you're doing in a small business.
Agreed. Great show, Dan.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.